president's support among Republican conservatives might be crumbling at this point?
I can't answer what the reaction is going to be. I just disagree with it, and I disagree with the premise upon which it's based that the president is unable to govern. I think all the evidence is to the contrary, including the fact that we're now going to get some oil from the Middle East.
Do you think Senator Buckley would do that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
That the president should not resign.
That's right. I happen to believe in the system, and I'm upholding a principle. It is now being studied by a congressional committee under the constitutional provisions that cover such things. And the case involving others is in the court, and I think that the presumption of innocence is assured to everyone, and that we await the outcome of both the committee, the congressional action, and the court.
So Rick should have turned over that White House document to the House committee.
I'm not a lawyer. All I know is that the president's lawyer said it was all right with him, but it's the defense lawyers of the men who were on trial who seem to be protesting it, and that's the decision for a court to make, not me.
You generally agree with Senator Buckley. Why are you going different ways this time?
Well, I'm not going any way other than what I have gone. He decided to take a little curve in the road. That's up to him. I'm not sure that we've always agreed on all things. We're friends, and generally it's true that our philosophy has been the same. I am in disagreement with him on this.
Gardner is a man of high principle.
I hope I am. Constitutional provision with regard to this. If the House of Representatives believes there is an impeachable offense, and then the trial goes before the Senate, and that has been done once before in the history of this country, and it didn't destroy the country, and that's the way the Constitution said it should be done. I think there's something far more disruptive in establishing a precedent, if we ever should do so, that by pressure alone of a president can be forced to resign.
Do you believe that President Nixon has committed any impeachable offenses?
It isn't a case of whether I believe or not believe. This is what the committee is attempting to determine. So far, such constitutional authorities as Senator Sam Ervin have said that there has been no evidence that there has been an impeachable offense.
But what do you believe, Governor, for the record?
I don't think there has been, no, but I'm a layman.
Who do you think should define an impeachable offense?
What?
Who do you think should define an impeachable offense? The committee or the White House?
Well, I think it's rather clear in the Constitution.
There seems to be some difference, though, between the interpretations provided by the White House and the committee.
Well, how would you do that, lawyer? Wait, there's one back. He's on another side. Well, I'll take him and then come back to you.
Governor, can you tell us, please, why you reappointed Catherine Harris to the Board of Regents?
Yes, I never intended to do otherwise. Catherine Harris has been on the Board of Regents long before I became governor. She was appointed by a previous governor. She has been one of the most faithful, one of the hardest working and best members of the Board of Regents that I've been able to observe in all these years, and it's a very fine Board of Regents, so I ask you to accept reappointment.
Trying to send a message to the Symbionese Liberation Army in the light of the situation involving Patricia Hearst?
No, as a matter of fact, I was very self-conscious in this tragic time of having to call her to ask her to accept a reappointment. Would have been much easier without them around. No, I wasn't sending a message to anyone. Because I know the termination dates of regents, and I have known that when the time came, which was March 1st, that I was going to want to reappoint her, and I've known that ever since I've been in this term of office.
Governor, your administration has been negotiating with Assemblyman Charles Warren on the energy What's the problem with that bill? What do you want in it?
Well, it's a very complex bill, and there are some differences, and there are some agreements, and we're continuing to negotiate, and we're getting down to certain points that I'd rather not get into the specifics of what those points are, but there are things that we feel the bill should do or should not do, and he feels the same way as the author, and it's been a measure of goodwill on the part of both sides in these negotiations. Yes, and I think we all are.
In the bill, it has a surcharge for research.
You know me, and on bills, I don't talk about them and what I'll sign or veto in advance.
Yeah. Governor, can you give us a straight story on whether the state is getting an extra allocation of gasoline this month? There have been conflicting reports.
Yes, there. Yes, it is, and there seems to have been a little slip-up in communications. I don't know how to understand it from whence it came, but apparently the percentage figure that was given to us as the percentage of increase we were going to get reflecting the increased number of automobiles in California over the 72 period was based on a different figure than we had assumed. When we translated the percentage figure into gallons, it came out at 46 million. It actually comes out to almost 42 million, so it's a slight difference. But we will be getting 779 million gallons of gasoline, and this represents an increase of 41.8 million. And evidently they were using a different base figure for computing the percentage increase we were being allotted than we were.
Say 48.9 or 8 million. that's the extra.
No, we're getting 41.8. And we had thought that it was going to, our first announcement, we simply took the percentage, and I think our mathematics was right, but we were working from a different base as to what the percentage increase that we were told by telegram that we were going to get. In our figures came out at 46 million, and then we found out that they were evidently using a different base for our March allotment, and it comes out at 41.8.
Governor, that 41.8 be allocated to the major growth counties, Los Angeles, Orange, Contra Costa, Santa Clara, San Francisco, instead of out to the Cal counties. Do you have any views on that?
Well, the regulations are such that that we don't have that authority. All we have is the 3% that is allowed for state discretion with regard to emergencies. The regulations in Washington still. They have the allocation, and we don't have that.
Will the additional gas be in the gas pump?
Huh? It's there now. It'll be delivered throughout the month. It's on its way.
Mr. Freeman, this is Dillard's interpretation of the telegram that this is over and above the previously announced March allocation. And the Federal Energy Office says that no, that it wasn't, that was included in the March allocation that had already been announced.
Well, depending on when they announce their figures and when we announce ours. But the total is now going to be, at least we're all agreed on this, the total is now going to be 779 million gallons. The original allocation was somewhere down $40-odd million, less than that.
Subject to fuel, but a different angle. John Merlo, Democratic candidate for Senate Governor, suggested you cancel your jet plane contract using the National Emergency Clause and that way save fuel.
What would I? Yeah, but I mean, what is it? What is he suggesting? Well, that lease jet comes under the head of general aviation. And general aviation's allocation of airplane fuel is something like about 1% of all aviation fuel uses. And yet it applies to planes that service 70% of the airports of the United States. states where there are no, where there is no commercial travel, and I don't see that there would be anything in the line of a savings in us doing that. But again, the original reason for the leasing of that jet, which is used by other departments also, was a part of security measures, and I don't have any control over that.
Governor, how far will the lifting of the Arab oil embargo go to alleviating the problem in California?
Well, this is one of the points that I think all of us together have a responsibility to make, and I hope we'll all do it. It's going to increase, of course. It's going to alleviate some of the problem. But the energy situation and the energy shortage existed before the Arabs shut off the oil. And what we should emphasize, this does not mean that everyone can go back to their wasteful ways. We're still going to have to observe some conservation measures. But now, I'm going to wait for somebody over here to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the resumption of Arab oil can add about 17% nationwide to the United States oil supply. Well, California would share in the same allocation proportion that we do now in that. So I suppose if it came out, that it would mean that we'd get 17% more than we're presently getting.
Governor, a legislative committee last week predicted that the kind of terrorist kidnapping, like the first kidnapping, would be repeated with public figures and people of importance. So the question is, do you feel any increased apprehension and is your security changed because of the situation?
I never comment on the security. I have not seen any changes. I'm just going about my daily life, and you can't live every day worrying about something like that, so I don't.
How about your family? Pretty apprehensive there, and your son, your wife.
Well, I think that's an apprehension that any man in this position lives with every day of his life.
Expressed any increased fear because of it?
No.
Governor, the service stations do not seem to be following your request to stay open on Sunday. Are you going to renew that request?
Oh, yes, I'm happy to bring you up to date on things. Yes, when we first instituted the plan in those counties where they asked for the plan, we had proposed that they ration their gasoline on a seven-day-a-week basis and encourage them to stay open. We realized that, of course, the national government in conservation method had asked for Sunday closings as a means of saving. But instituting the odd and even day, we recognized that we had to encourage this other. This did not, they didn't open on Sundays in the numbers that we had hoped, and we had the right after the weekend long lines in spite of our odd even plan. We met recently with representatives from local governments of those counties that have the plan, and as a result of this, I personally have asked the major oil companies, which operate a small percentage of the stations. Most people don't realize that much more than 90% of the stations are independent, but I asked the major oil companies if those that they operated, if they would open them on Sunday. There has been a great cooperation on their part. A number of them were open last Sunday. There will be a greater number open next Sunday. And we have also extended the invitation or the request to the Association of Independent Dealers. So there will be several hundred additional stations open throughout the state next Sunday. Well, I just gave the figures here. I don't know just in how he means or in what extent that he means that, but as I said, well over 90% of all the oil stations are independently owned. I don't care what sign is up outside. They have a lease arrangement and a contract for purchasing of major oil wholesale. But there are only a few hundred, a small percentage, I should say. I don't know the exact number. But a small percentage, less than 10% of the stations that are actually operated by the major oil companies.
Many of those contracts with the independents during the fuel shortage have been a problem. The companies, the fuel stations really haven't been independent of the company.
No, we've done some looking into that, and we found out that most of those companies, most of those leases, only assure that they will take a certain percentage of their oil or their product from the leasing company. They are free to go out on their own.
Governor, the Attorney General also recommended that the pipelines be placed under regulation of the Public Utilities Commission. Where do you stand on it?
I haven't seen what it is that he recommended, and I'd want to study it myself. I'd also want to find out what the PUC's reaction was to that. I personally, I think there is a difference between private enterprise situations, such as an industry, such as the oil industry, and the utility monopolies, which, of course, must be regulated by a commission, a public utility commission. And I question the advisability of putting private enterprise under that commission.
A public utility, then?
It's not in the monopoly sense that a utility is.
What? How about in and of itself, to the degree that it, so many people depend on it and use it? You don't think it's a public utility?
Well, again, as I say, we either believe in a free enterprise system, we believe in federal government regulations, not federal, government regulations to ensure protection for the consumer, but we do not place private enterprise under government control and regimentation. We do with the utilities on the basis that they, by their very nature, do have a monopoly situation. Therefore, to protect the public from monopoly, we regulate them.
You seem to be then in opposition to both of the Attorney General's recommendations so far.
Well, I don't really know what it is he's recommended. As I said,
about 2 weeks ago, Governor.
Well, I would have to see what they were, and I would also want to get the reaction of the Public Utilities Commission.
Governor, what he's recommending is that the major oil companies sell their wholly owned gasoline stations.
Well, if they did, this would be a very small number. As I say, it's less than 10%. I've heard as low as 3% of the stations.
That idea, is that idea offensive to your sense of free enterprise?
Well, I've never given it much thought. As I say, it hardly owning from anywhere from 10 down to 3% of the stations hardly constitutes a monopoly. And I can't see it as a great threat to the independent stations.
Governor, there was a story over the weekend suggesting that you have delivered an unprecedented bonanza to your utility companies. Rates under you in the 5-year studies have increased $813 million. Under former governors, they've all gone down. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I won't define my reaction. I'll just simply say that a one-time, somewhat dissident employee, staff member of the Public Utilities Commission, brought that before the Senate committee here in the Capitol quite some time ago and hoped they would adopt it as a report. They did not. They rejected it. But it was leaked at that time about a year ago as something of a Senate committee report, which it was not, and then it has just turned up recently in another newspaper as something brand new and factual on the situation. The plain truth of the matter is, and get these points very carefully, number one, utility services in the state of California rank the highest in the nation. Number two, utility rates in the state of California are the lowest of all the 25 major cities in the United States. We rank among the lowest, in the lowest. Number three, earnings of utilities in California are lower than in the rest of the country. Now, with all of this, the utilities have managed to keep up back through these recent years with the expansion and the growth in California, enlarge the facilities to meet our needs. It has only been recently that we have pointed out, the energy crisis and all, that California might come to the day of brownouts as we've seen them in the East and in other parts of the country, power failures and so forth, long delays in the installation of telephones. But we don't have any of those things. Now, I don't know what more you could ask than of a public utilities commission than to provide the people with the best service at the lowest rate, and the companies having the lowest rate of return, the lowest profit.
Governor, that same story suggests, for example, that your stance is that the companies themselves should set depreciation expense, whereas traditionally the commission itself would scrutinize that. Is that your feeling?
Well, I don't know. I don't issue orders to the Public Utilities Commission, and I don't get on the phone and tell them what I want them to do or ask favors of them in any way. I am responsible for them, and they've been doing their job. And I haven't been that careful about all the points that this man made. As I say, this is I don't find it a factual report, and I find it something that was rejected once by Senate committee upstairs, and I haven't taken it up point by point with the Utilities Commission. I only know is what I've said to you about the utility situation in California and the advantages that the people of California have because of that.
Governor, yesterday the owners of private mental health facilities were here in the Capitol to complain about the fact that they haven't had rate increases for the last 6 years. Today, the Senate Select Committee on State Hospitals also said those local programs are badly underfunded. Is not, in fact, the transfer of the mentally ill and the mentally retarded to local areas bogging down the cost of that, and shouldn't the state do something to provide more money for these local mental health programs?
This is possible. I don't know. I haven't had a discussion on that as yet, or this particular situation. I only know that the program is not bogging down. I do know that in the past, as the Lanham and Petras short bill has been implemented, there were counties that moved a little too fast in some instances. We found out, for example, that the state did not have authority with regard to licensing and regulation of some of these. We've been taking steps in that direction, and are continuing to take steps to give us that authority. But basically, it is a very sound program. Anytime you get one foot across the border from the state of California, you discover that the rest of the United States recognizes mental health care in California as the leader of the nation, if not the world. And they come here to find out how we're making it work. Now, originally, the Lanham and Petras short bill called for state funding of 75% of the subsidy of the county mental health care, the local clinics and hospitals. We found that many of them were operating with only a 50% subsidy, that the state wasn't keeping its end of the bargain. We are funding them now at 90% of support. And there may be, as you make a movement of this kind, there may still be some inequities, and there obviously are some places that need correcting and bringing up to date. I know in one county, Los Angeles County, the latest figures I had was that there were about 1,400 such institutions, that 1,000 of them were providing a better service than we've ever provided in the state hospitals. About another 200 of them are equal to the state hospitals, and there were a couple of hundred that we were after and that we're working on to bring up to standard. So you are going to have situations of that kind, but it's not through neglect or it's not through any failure of the program as such. It is a fine program, and we've increased the budget for that sort of thing from around $40 million to $300 million. So the state is obviously, this is an indication of our intention to make the program work. If there is still something that isn't needed to be done, we'll do it.
So the committee, Governor, suggested that there needs to be a reversal of the trend that your administration has established with mental hospitals, and that there could quite possibly be a doubling of the entire budget. Considerable amount of money, more money spent. Do you agree with that?
Well, very frankly, I think that there's been a great deal of misinformation put out by CSEA, who objected to the entire philosophy of this because they wanted more state hospitals and bigger state hospitals and more state employees without this being turned back to the local level. And frankly, I repeat, a great deal of misinformation has been put out of CSEA headquarters. And frankly, it is a disservice to the people. It causes great worry and concern and fear among the families of people who are patients in these hospitals. But I'd like to call to your attention the fact that even my predecessor, before our administration came in, had reduced the population in the hospitals for the mentally ill from over 37,000 down to 26,000. Now it has gone from 26,000 under us down to 7,000. But it has gone with that increase in our administration, that increased subsidy to these local mental health care centers. But the people experienced in the field, the people who are responsible for the policies of helping the mentally ill and trying to restore them to a useful life, endorse totally this concept of smaller, more personalized treatment centers close to home where some patients can become outpatients and even hold jobs and live reasonably normal lives. Now, admittedly, you couldn't have had that without some of the developments in recent years in the tranquilizers and methods of treatment. Maybe in an earlier time, we can't blame our parents and say, well, they had snake pits in their day. In that day, they didn't have the same knowledge and the same means of treatment that we have. But we are curing mentally ill, and we are helping mentally ill to live normal lives with this system.
Governor, the same committee this morning seemed to indicate that they felt they would get support from your administration in increasing funds at the community level, not in the state hospital. In fact, Senator Baer mentioned that it might be a necessity to double fund for
well,
a few
as
years
I say, we know that there are some, and there were some counties moved too fast, and we know that there has to be some adjustments. We're doing it constantly. It isn't something that just was discovered. I gave you the figures on one county, Los Angeles County, and what we've been trying to do there with the 200 out of 1,400 that we believe are below the standard they should be.
Indicating something very dramatic, like double funding of the community level clinics rather than state hospital improvement. Is that too dramatic?
You're going to have to let me sit down and see exactly what it is they're proposing and what the problem is.
Specifically, they're talking about funding the LPS program, increasing the funds for it. Are you willing to support some augmentation of LPS funding in this budget year?
Well, I haven't seen the figures. I've seen what they're recommending, and it's going to depend an awful lot with the budget already made up on what's available to us.
Governor, an official in the State Department of Health told me yesterday that one thing that should be done is to build in an automatic cost of living increase for these local facilities, the rates they receive, as is the case in certain welfare categories. Do you think that would be a good idea?
Well, I'd want to study it. I really would want to study that.
There was a report in the Washington paper this week that Casper Weinberger has joined the inner circle of your advisors who are planning your 1976 presidential campaign. Can you confirm that or confirm the existence of such a group?
No, there's nothing to confirm, and that was an Evans and Novak column. And all that we've had is the same fine relationship that we always had with Casper Weinberger and his assurance in regard to the welfare programs and the talk of new programs that we will be updated and continually briefed on what it is that's being proposed in Washington.
Governor, are you aware of anyone who any of your friends may have retained the 1974 children of Epcliffe and White to wander around the country and see what to your potential Reagan candidacy might be?
No, no one has done that, and no one could under the present election laws because they'd have to report that as campaign activity and whatever was spent. And there's nothing of that kind being done.
You're saying that there are no political committees now in existence collecting funds or making maneuvering with regard to any political ambitions you might have in the future?
For me?
Yes.
I am saying that exactly as you just put it.
Governor, could you clarify your remark of last week that the new governor's residence did not represent your personal taste and the fact that you approved the plan for it?
Well, this was not meant in any derogation of what had been planned by the architects. This was in response to a charge that had been made that Nancy and myself had sought to impose on the state of California what we ourselves would have chosen as a house for ourselves to live in. And I said, no, if these had been our architects and we were building a home with that money, we personally might have had other ideas, would have had other ideas, I'm sure, but that our function was to give an input to the architect regarding the problems that we are dealing with firsthand and have dealt with over these last several years with regard to what is required of you in entertainment, your own family problems are, the possibility that there will be governors in the future with small children and so forth. And this was the input that we provided. Plus, the decision that had been made earlier and seemed to have general agreement that keeping the home within the Spanish style would give it a longevity, would not be something that would go out of style the next day, that would be in keeping with the history of California. Now, the architects in the Spanish style, contemporized, not totally going back and embracing the classic old style, but modernizing up to meet the requirements of today, and we gave that input. But I was simply refuting the charge of one man who seems to feel that somehow we were dictating that this be built as if we were going to live in it. We're not going to live in it at all. It isn't going to be finished by the time we're
but
gone.
But doesn't reflect your personal taste for a governor's residence. If you were going to serve another term, wouldn't you like to live in such a residence?
Well, I think anyone would like to live in such a residence. I think it's a beautiful home. And I think that it also recognizes and some the added problems of entertainment, has made provision for them, but without going lavishly into providing ballrooms and that sort of thing. It's a very funny thing, but one of the first, when Nancy came up here to meet with Mrs. Brown about the old residence, one of the first things that Mrs. Brown said to her was, he said, anything that you may want to do and start to do with regard to providing a new residence for governors of California, count me in, I'd like to help. Now, the architects also consulted Mrs. Brown and consulted Mrs. Knight, as well as us, about this residence.
Any more questions?
Governor, now that the San Francisco strike is over, are you happy with the way it was handled and settled?
I'm glad it's over. Said before, it was an illegal strike, and I think it should have been recognized as such.
Governor, yesterday when you were talking to the students, there was a question regarding the media, and you said one of the things that bothered you that the other side wasn't always told. Would you favor, like, Florida's right to reply law, where if a public official is criticized in print, he gets to have his rebuttal in print soon thereafter?
What law is this?
It's called the right to reply.
Oh. No, not necessarily. I don't think that's an answer. And I thought that I, knowing some of you were present, I thought I tempered any criticism I might had. I said to the young people that in this day, when they are being beset by a flood of information from every source, more than any generation perhaps in history, that they should recognize that there's very often some of that is misinformation. And they have to really work at it and go out of their way to make sure they have both sides of issues and understand completely what the situation is.